Good morning. I'm Jill Schumann, and I'm President and CEO of Leading Age Maryland, and we are so glad to have lots of folks joining us. I can see people joining us as we speak. I'm so glad that you're with us today. And just a reminder, since we have so many folks that call in regularly, and I know in lots of cases there are teams that are calling in, please do email me if you have any thoughts about topics you'd really love to hear in addition to the ones that we're offering. And if there are topics you would like to offer, things that your team is doing that might be beneficial to others, please do let us know. We're planning the schedule now for 2017. We'd love to add you to it or to find folks to address topics you're interested in. We're really pleased today to we're really pleased today to have with us folks from the Graham Company who will be talking about looking at nursing practices that may maximize or minimize information related to residents and its security. Today we have Betty McNee and John Kilgariff with us, and I'm going to turn it over to them. Thanks, guys.
Great. Thank you, Jill. This is Betty, and I appreciate you taking time out of your day to participate in the call. As you guys read in the announcement, there is a big news update. There's a new group among us, striking fear in the hearts of risk managers and privacy officers throughout the nation. It's the NWC, Nurses with Computers. We didn't go to school for nursing. We tried to avoid that altogether. But what we see is unknowingly and with good intention, nurses have put their residents and clients' information at risk. So while IT is doing all their work with the firewalls and the virus protection and such, we want to encourage you to look at cybersecurity through the eyes of what our nurses are doing day to day because there are risks involved there. I'm joined today with John Kilgariff, who works at the Graham Company as well. John, why don't you introduce yourself?
Thanks, Betty, and thanks, Jill, for having us here today. My name is John Kilgariff. I'm an account manager here at the Graham Company, and in my role at the Graham Company, I'm responsible on a day-to-day, my team and I are responsible on a day-to-day basis to support the operational, if you will, risk management needs of our clients. We, as you probably know, have a focus in the health and human services space with a particular emphasis on senior living. And, as such, we field a number of support roles for our clients and the need to protect personal information and the issues associated with network security fall into those as well.
Super. So we wanted to kind of reflect back. CMS published top 10 tips for cybersecurity in healthcare, and there are 10 great practices. We want to use that as our outline today, but then go beyond to what we've seen. As a nurse, I've worked together with our clients on a clinical risk side. So kind of share some of those practices we've seen and things that you specifically need to look for in your organization. So let me tell you where to find the checklist. Just kind of mark it down. It is healthit.gov. And we're going to review all those. But what's neat is at some point, we'll make reference to checklists. There's links of checklists that are available on that sheet, which can help you kind of do maybe your risk management committees want to look at an assessment. So that can be helpful for you. So I'm going to, the first one, John, if you want to start us off.
Sure, Betty. The first item on CMS's list is about culture and the need to establish a security culture. They note, and this is very true, as I'm sure we're all aware, that with regard to security systems, the weakest link in any security setup is the user themselves. And furthermore, the folks that look at this, that research it, have determined that it's very difficult to raise people's awareness about the threats and vulnerability that can jeopardize what they do on a daily basis. We all see the news reports about how, you know, information is breached by, you know, Target, the big retailer suffers a breach, or an insurance company, a healthcare provider suffers a breach, a health system suffers a breach. But when we reduce that to our day-to-day activities, it's very difficult to implement and for the average user set the level of awareness. So how do you get there? Well, you have to have policies. You have to have a culture that throughout the organization is committed to a security mindfulness. And these practices have to be a core part of the organization. They can't be bolted on. They can't be an adder. And, you know, I like to illustrate culture by talking about the difference between compliance, just following the rules, checking the box, I've done this, my password is of this nature, or I lock my laptop up at night, or so forth and so on. The difference between compliance and commitment, being really committed to a security-like culture. And the good illustration of this is driving habits. So I'll use myself as an example. When I get in the car, I am absolutely committed to putting my seatbelt on. Whether I'm a driver or a passenger in the front seat or the back seat, I put that seatbelt on all the time. I'm committed to it. And I do it because, you know, I've been in an accident before. I've seen the results of accidents, and I know the value in wearing my seatbelt every day, and I try to instill that on others as well. I am more compliant about the speed limit. So if I'm driving down I-95 and the posted speed limit is 60 and traffic's moving along at 70, 75 maybe, I am more going to use that posting as a little bit of a guideline, and I'm going to let other traffic set the speed that I'm going to follow. And that's really the difference between being committed to something and being compliant with something. And as respects to the network security rules that we're going to talk about here and some of the practices we're talking about, our goal is to emphasize the importance of really building a culture around being committed to safe practices in the IT and cybersecurity space.
John, what we've seen, and I'll share with the folks here, when you roll out your electronic health record, you know, it's a big venture. People are really hyped up about it. They get it. They're very vigilant about all the processes. What we see is it's really hard to maintain that high level, that cybersecurity focus. People, you know, nurses aren't trying to make it difficult, but sometimes they say, you know, the importance of getting the right medications out versus making sure to lock my computer every time. It's just the importance of it wanes over time. So what we're suggesting is that you put those good security practices into things like your management walkthrough. You need to look for times that nurses are leaving their computer accessible, and we'll talk about some more specific, but you got to keep it on the forefront. Have an education and training event through the year when there are, like cyber breaches that John spoke of, that we do need to keep that on the forefront. If you learn of something like password sharing, and guys, it happens, we need to take that seriously, not just, you know, the wet noodle whip on the wrist. So, you know, keep that safety mindset on the forefront, even for our very busy nurses. All right, number two, John.
So the next item we'll talk about is a more specific item relating to mobile devices. And, you know, we all know that the use of smartphones and tablets has become ubiquitous in our society, both on an individual level, in the workplace, and particularly in a setting where data is a part of the daily workflow, such as a healthcare setting in you know all segments within the healthcare industry. But transporting that data via mobile devices, it's inherently risky. These devices are easy to lose, and vulnerable to theft. They're visible by others, right? Just because of the nature of the way they are. So the use of them in the segment of healthcare has to be driven by more than just convenience. And I think that's true. It is. I mean, the productivity, the workflow, the quality, outcome, advantages of using these devices goes well beyond just convenience. The fact that they are prone to breach and loss, though, mandates that you take special precautions regarding how to mitigate those risks And, you know, the first one we'll talk about here is, or the main one I would say is encryption, frankly. Encryption is a low-cost method of protecting the information on a mobile device. It is not excessively expensive, and it is not excessively burdensome on the user. They can implement these systems at a cost that really gives a lot of peace of mind for managers in their use. So, Betty, what do you have to say?
That's a really good note, because what we found with organizations that we deal with is that the hospitals that are coming in to see our residents and our clients typically work in hospital environments where they do have encrypted text messaging available. So the doctors have become accustomed to texting information to the nurses. If you don't think your nurses are texting your doctors, you're going to have to put them in a confessional to get the truth, because they are. They do, you know, they sometimes don't bother making the phone call, or the doctor doesn't want the information that way, and so they're texting. So if you haven't looked at encrypted texting for your organization, you're at least going to have to deal with that. You've got doctors that want the information that way, and the nurses are just trying to get their job done. So really look at making this encrypted texting, because that's kind of where things are going. And I don't know what it is about nurses losing phones, laptops, whatever. It's a big deal. I don't, maybe they drop out of purses, I don't know, or handbags. So, you know, that the issues of theft are something that we need to consider. So encryption, I would say, number one thing we need to put in place. And we'll move on to number three.
So the next item we'll talk about is just habits, good computer habits. And this is more of a use type of thing in terms of the cause, but the control measure around habits is really a systems-based one. So, you know, I imagine we're not talking to many IT professionals here today, but habits, though, we can educate and explain to people that systems need to be supported with good habits. But the proper maintenance of systems in order to protect all the users is a critical aspect of network security. So what does that mean? It means that, practically speaking, your IT strategy should involve configuration management, making sure that the software applications that are out there on your, you know, desktop computers, your laptop computers, your portable devices, include only those applications that are needed for the practice. This limits the possibility that rogue applications within games, you know, instant messaging applications, photo sharing tools, don't end up causing a problem across your system. And in this area, you often need to rely on professionals either within your organization or consultants who you hire to support your IT infrastructure to make sure that these things relating to configuration, software maintenance, update, operating system update and maintenance, to making sure that the latest antivirus, anti-malware software is in place. And those updates are done on a regular basis.
The big thing that we're seeing here with our clients is that nurses have added sometimes software programs or other apps or games on a computer. And so constantly looking at that, making certain you're not introducing viruses, et cetera, to the software, or I'm sorry, the hardware itself is important. And there's, you know, I'm looking at the time because there's so much that we wanted to share with this. In the interest of time, what I'm thinking that I'll do, the fourth item was in using a firewall. Nurses, we really don't get so involved with that, but the biggest violation of the firewall is I have seen where different settings where nurses will change the setting of the computer. So we need to double check. IT does need to make hardware visits and make certain none of these settings have changed. And remember that health IT.gov, there is a checklist, a firewall checklist. It's available to your organization. Get it, look at it, make certain that all of your criteria is exactly where it needs to be and that the hardware is checked for that. Number five, John talked about installing and maintaining antivirus software. As if nurses are clicking a link, they're checking onto their Facebook or whatever during a break time on a computer. We know that viruses can get onto the computer, and sometimes virus looks like an antivirus notice. IT needs to do a lot of education so people understand what does it look like when your computer has a virus so that they are reporting it early so IT can intervene. The other thing that we're it's number six, is plan for the unexpected. We talked about a recovery, or you know of a recovery plan if you're doing e-prescribing with your nurses, that we have to make a plan. Are you printing your cardexes from pharmacy? Are you going to have a laptop so that you can print off, if the system goes down, that you can print off and still have care and documentation care? Again, there is a checklist for backup and recovery, but antivirus, there's a checklist that's available on healthit.gov. The one big piece that I want to make certain that we've seen the biggest culprit will skip to what they call number seven, which is access control. Guys, nurses talk with hospice providers that come that need information. Sometimes lab comes over, they need information. And many times a nurse will sign on with their information and their IT and let someone else sit down in front of the computer. It happens. We've seen it. Or if they've been reprimanded for that, they will print off information and hand it. You need to watch for these practices and make a plan and educate on, well, what can we do? Is there a unit a clerk that can help with information like that? Because these are where exposures happen. I talked about the passwords, making certain that people aren't sharing their password. One other thing I'll add, John, be ready to queue up if there's a big point that you want to make. I want to make certain also with your guest access, you know, we have lots of customers. It's the family members that want to come in and use our networks. Make certain that's a separate network, obviously, that where your resident information is not residing on the same network. So separate those two out. John, do you have any other big highlights you want to touch before we let these folks go?
Just reiterate there what you said, Betty. You know, the single biggest issue with network access is an unsecured or a breach wireless access point. So if you are going to make Wi-Fi available to non-employees, be sure that it's a separate secured firewall network, and that is something that can be implemented by your IT staff and is a, you know, kind of a security 101 with regards to access. The other area on access, the single most common way that electronic health record information is compromised is simply through the loss of devices. So we hit on earlier about the need to secure and encrypt the information on those devices. The last thing I think maybe we leave you with is that securing that information should involve not only education of your people, but a policy with management oversight regarding the limitation of physical access. So that means securing the physical machines, the physical keys, as well as the ability to take, you know, certain devices from areas that you wouldn't want them removed from.
Super. Well, this is a hot topic and a big area for exposure for your organization. So you could tell we have lots to say about it. Certainly, if you have questions, Jill, do you want to see if folks have questions now or how they should get questions forwarded to you?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, thanks, Betty and John. As you said, lots and lots of information. And we've got many, many folks on the call. I'm unmuting lines in case anybody has a question. anybody want to ask anything of Betty or John. And certainly if you have specific questions, you certainly can email them to me, and I would be glad to pass them on, and Betty and John can get back to you. But I see that folks are needing to return to work. So thank you so much, Betty, John, and everyone for joining us, and we'll see you in 2 weeks for Tuesday Stand-Up. Thanks so much.